Hello, John.
Hi, Kevin.
How are you today?
Doing well. Good to see you again. Welcome back, folks.
Welcome back to episode 2 of the Lex Files.
Moving right back into it after an action-packed first episode.
This episode is also action-packed. A little more adult. It's not preschool anymore.
Not middle school. It's not high school like us. We're in high school.
We are in high school.
1997.
That is a correct statement. It is 1997, and we are in high school. So before we go into the show itself, we want to introduce ourselves some more, make some more of our background, different science fiction stories, movies, books we love, so you understand, as our listener, where we are coming from.
Thank you, Kevin. So I've always been a big Star Trek The Next Generation fan.
Are you saying that Next Generation, in its 8 seasons, is better than the 2 episodes we've had of Lex?
So far, I would say that I still prefer it, but I think Lex is coming on strong.
You know, there's 2 big worlds in science fiction, at least when it comes to movies and television. It's Star Trek versus Star Wars. John's clearly on the Star Trek bench. I'm on the Star Wars side, and John, I don't know if you've heard of this, but they're making prequels to Star Wars.
I heard about that. I read about that in the newspaper.
Supposedly, rumor has it, they're going to do like a coming-of-age story for Darth Vader, so we can see him be all badass and kill Jedi.
Yeah, it's going to be really badass. I think it's going to kind of be like a young Indiana Jones kind of thing.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Where he's just going on adventures and things like that as an awesome ass-whipping bad guy.
Yeah, there's no way this can be bad. I mean, it's just going to be, it's the best character, arguably, from the trilogy being a badass.
Yeah, and it's the prequel, so we're going to get to see all the, you know, the old world, right. You know, the Jedis.
Yeah, I'm pumped about it. Believe right now they're trying to have a release in 2 years, so we don't have much details about the script yet, but I really hope they get like a great actor to play Darth Vader. Someone that can really...
has some range.
Right, some range, because the Vader character...
It could seem wooden with the wrong choice for an actor.
I don't see how it could be wooden, though, because you have somebody, not looking at any of the expanded universe, because that's just nonsense, you have somebody who was a Jedi, betrayed them, and then, I guess, hunted them down as well. So there has to be some kind of really good actor who can portray that kind of conflict.
Do you think, like, River Phoenix would be a great choice?
River Phoenix would be a good choice, absolutely. I don't know if such an actor even exists yet. You know, because they should probably go with somebody new, because you don't want to create a character where it's like, oh, that's so-and-so acting as Darth Vader.
Right. You wouldn't want, like, Samuel L. Jackson or someone in these movies
who's
going to just be like, okay, it's that guy. You know, it's not the character.
Right. Because every time you see it, you're like, oh, it's that guy.
Exactly. Yeah, and they won't do that. You know, George Lucas is too smart.
He is. He's built a billion-dollar industry around his stories, which are just fantastic.
Lucasfilm, not going anywhere.
Nope. Let's dive right into the episode now. Since you understand our background.
You know everything about us now.
We should mention that John is actually a senior in high school and I'm only a junior. So this podcast may be hard to do in a year or two.
Yeah, when we go off to college, it's going to be difficult. But for now, we've got the time. Let's get right into episode 2.0 here, Kevin. Supernova.
This episode, you can call it Supernova, but that's not the name of it. It is the Tim Curry episode. Right off the bat, they have Tim Curry, and I'm just like, who the hell is Tim Curry going to play?
Right, well, he's not in it right off the bat, but they've got his name there at
right.
the beginning.
They're and just we're thinking, teasing you.
Tim Curry, that's awesome.
This is going to be great. So the show opens with the Lex looking for a home, going off of the end of the first episode. They're in the dark universe trying to find somewhere to live, and the show has the Lex himself talking, explaining the plot point of the previous episode. And again, the Lex is not a very intelligent creature, but smart enough to convey simple ideas.
Such as the episode 1 recap.
Right.
And I thought the Lex did a fantastic job.
The Lex should recap every episode for every TV show. It'd be much simpler, much more cut down the bullshit.
So we kind of start this episode off with an unusual sight. It's just kind of a body in cryosleep floating through space in a little capsule. And he's got a recording in English. It basically is a distress signal.
Right, it's a distress signal. He was sent out in space to look for help because his planet is dying of a horrible plague. And which why you would send out a guy in cryosleep is kind of weird. Because you'd send a drone, We're going too far into this.
maybe not. This could be good. So they're sending out him there. They're looking for a cure, basically. Right. So potentially he has the disease. They've sent him out into space. Mm. So someone can find him, be like, oh, can we cure that? Yes, we can. Now let's send it back home to his planet and save them all.
Maybe they're even more malicious. Because you could send out the description of the plague. I would argue it's genetic code at this point, because you've got space travel, you probably understand how genetics works. If you're just sending out some guy into space, and this universe is full of humans, because why not? What if he then infects the crew of the ship or the planet he lands on? Then that species is forced to work with him to cure it.
That's a smart move,
too. So this guy, Mr. Baldy McHeadphones, rams into the Lex, the Lex rams into him and dies.
Right, yeah, none of this matters because the Lex just smashes right through him because Stanley's not paying attention at the controls.
And I argue he had it coming. That's all I'm saying.
You think he was out there to wipe out entire species with his disease.
Yeah. The Lex show is not taking its cues from standard sci-fi, because in most sci-fi shows, this would be the setup for the episode. Nope, this is just the Lex ramming into space junk and doesn't give a shit because it's the Lex.
Smashes the thing into pieces. Stanley kind of wakes up.
Right, he's sleeping in the command chamber, I guess, or the bridge of the ship.
790, the whole time everyone's sleeping, is just popping off these poems about Zev and all the things he wants to do to her.
The varied sexual things he really wants to do to Zev.
They all get up and kind of meet at the bridge, and they're trying to decide where to start looking for a new planet. Zev wants to go to the Burn and G's home planet.
Brunus, which is the original planet they came from.
Stanley, not so much.
Right.
He's not sold on this idea.
It will take 75,000 years to search for the entire planet, and here's where we really see in the show that Zev is the most powerful one in the show. She's the one in charge. Stanley may be the captain by default having the key, but he's not making the decisions. Zev is smarter than him, stronger than him, and knows how to use her sexuality to manipulate Stan. And Stan's just your lonely, pathetic guy who just wants attention or affection, and Zev knows that and knows how to manipulate him.
Yeah, Stanley, not a lot of people like him, so anyone being the slightest bit nice to him can kind of manipulate him and get their way. So we kind of take a brief jump away from there, and we see what I thought at first was a swamp monster. But then I realized it was Laika.
Or Jigarada.
From the first episode.
Yeah,
and
I thought it was Laika, but it turns out it's Jigarada.
Yeah, it turns out now she's going by Jigarada. I don't know if we got that wrong in the first episode, or they changed it. But this is Jigarada. She's the cannibal lady from the first episode that Kai chucked off of the Lex. She pops out of a swamp and screams for a good 10 straight seconds.
Oh, her screams are fantastic. She is just guttural and very angry. So, and she's been in the bowels of the Lex, I assume.
Just kind of, yeah, in that. I don't know if the swamp, I think, is maybe the sewage.
Maybe it's like the butthole of the Lex, maybe?
It could be.
Because the Lex has a mouth, I would assume.
Well, and the passenger's got to be, you know, making water somewhere.
Making some poop.
Dropping some turds. Laika's in the swamp. Her name's not Laika, it's Jigarada. Which she reminds us every time she speaks, because she starts every sentence with Jigarada. She talks in the third person. Jigarada wants this. Jigarada hates that.
Now let's get into the meat. So Zev wants to find Brunus. Stanley wants to find any inhabited planet to make a home for themselves.
So Zev is kind of flirting with Stanley. This actually happens right after we see the Zev shower scene with a penis-like shower head.
Yes. So this is going to be penis reference number one for this episode, I would assume.
So far.
Unless you count the Lex itself, but that would be a lot.
We counted that last time, though. We'll just count new ones moving forward. So we've got a shower scene with Zev, with the porno music is playing.
Oh, it's such softcore porn music. You can tell this is made by Showtime, absolutely. Water is going down her body, she's filling her nipples up. You know, let me tell you about my beef.
It's Kevin's beef, everybody.
She's taking a shower. John, when you take a shower, what's the first thing you do before you get into the shower?
I mean, I usually would take off my clothing.
Zev doesn't do this. Zev is still wearing the rubber restraints when she was a prisoner. The weird clavicle chest thing and the belt that she wore that was keeping her restrained in the giant metal boards from last time. There is no reason for her to keep wearing that outfit or those rubber things during the show. They're only meant as restraints. It's like if someone captured you and put you in handcuffs, you still let the handcuffs dangle from the side.
Maybe she's keeping them on to be symbolic of her imprisonment so she doesn't forget everything she went through.
Shower scene does start off with her showering from the dangly penis from the ceiling that is the shower head.
It's, right.
And it's just, he's batting her in the face. So Stan comes creeping into the bathroom area, just watching her. And Zev knows he's watching. That's when Stanley makes his move, appealing to the old adage, if I was the last man alive and you're the last woman, we should fuck.
Which she kind of plays along with and then tells him to go erupt by himself.
Right. But she does go into great detail about how horny she is all the time, just to rub it in how he's never going to get her sensual sex slave body.
So then Stanley gets a little dark with it and basically threatens to kill himself to extort a kiss from Zev.
790 is egging him on the entire time to jump.
Yeah, 790 wants Stan to die so bad.
790, he's got sarcastic wit and odd sexual fetishes, which is pretty much in line with the show.
So anyway, Stanley doesn't jump, extorts a kiss from Zev, then...
Let's talk about the kiss for a second.
It's a pretty bad kiss. So, I mean, it's like a first kiss.
It's not even a first kiss, even. Because when you first kissed a girl, remember last week in recess, when you first kiss a girl, you don't just stick your lips out like a duck and mush. There has to be some pumping of the lips, right? He's just like mashing on her face. It's not a good kiss.
No, it wasn't a good kiss.
And Stan is just trying to impress her how good a kisser he is. It's the most awkward thing in the episode, probably. Which later on in the episode, you'll realize how much that statement means.
Then Swamp, like a Jiggerata.
Jiggerata!
Shows up. There's a brief confrontation there between her and Kai, who wakes up from hypersleep. He has a very limited amount of proto-blood left at this stage.
Right.
So it runs out way faster when he's out of cryosleep.
Right. If he's in cryosleep, he's not using any of his proto-blood. He's only got like 10 days left. So yeah, Jiggerata is running around trying to find things to eat. Because remember, she's a cannibal. All she eats is flesh. And she finds frozen Kai. He's probably not the best person to try to eat, if we're being honest. You know, the undead killing machine that you take his head off, he doesn't give a shit.
Right, and Zev sees him kind of save the day. Jiggerata is thwarted for the moment, but not defeated. Zev explains to Kai that she wants to go to his homeworld and save his life, to which he responds, I wasn't aware the Burenji have learned the secret to life, which is a really good point. They press forward anyway towards the Burenji homeworld.
Also, a great thing to mention is that he doesn't give a shit. He doesn't care about being alive. He has no wants of his own. The only thing he actually wants is revenge on the Shadow to fulfill the prophecy that he's the last of the Burenji.
Yeah, he wouldn't mind going out himself. He has pretty much no care about that at all. The same goes for 790. In fact, he makes a point to say that he has no care for his own well-being.
So we're looking at characters with singular drive then?
For Kai and 790, I think that's the case.
Zev Puss, right?
Right.
And
Kai is just our death, basically.
What does Zev want?
She wants to get laid.
She does want to get laid, but she wants more than that.
She wants Kai.
She wants Kai. And Stanley?
It's kind of like a love quadrangle.
Mm-hmm.
Or a love square. I don't know how you would put it. With Zev, Kai, Stanley, and 790 on the ship.
How often do you think Stan masturbates?
Pretty frequently.
Okay.
If I know security guards.
Another thing about my beef. Okay, so why is he still wearing the stupid hat that says 4 on it? That means he's a level 4 security guard. I understand being in the Lex and having no clothing to change into, but he could at least take off the hat.
Maybe he's going bald.
Oh, wow. Bumper! Time for the bumper! Bumper! You know what you need to listen to this podcast? Is that a love of science fiction and dicks? The internet? The best way to get the internet now? America Online.
I've heard of America Online, Kevin, but I don't know much about them.
They're the guys that send you never-ending discs because they're trying to help you. They want you to have their service because it's cheaper. It's better. It's the same speed, but it is cheaper.
Welcome back to the Lex Files, folks. Before we get on to the second half, we have a special guest in the studio with us today. It's the Lex.
Hello, listeners.
Lex, great to have you here. Now, you are a gigantic spaceship.
Yes.
Not my typical interview guest, but I'll do the best that I can here.
Okay.
So, what brings you to our corner of the galaxy here?
I came to your yummy planet for Some work.
Yummy Planet. Well, what kind of work will you be doing?
Mostly modeling. I'm very big in Hollywood.
Good one, Lex. So what kind of modeling do you do?
Sometimes I pose for Journey.
I love Journey.
They're nice guys.
Their album covers with the spaceships?
Yes. They're absolutely delicious.
I don't know what you mean by delicious. I think their music's great.
You know, being a giant ship, there's not much to do in space but listen to rock and roll and acid.
And you take acid, you kind of fly through the universe. That all sounds really great, Lex. So you're in town doing any, doing your modeling, doing anything else while you're here? Anything you want to plug?
Last week, I blew up Omicron 5. I want to plug that.
You want to plug that you blew up a planet?
Yes. It was a yummy planet, too.
So did you eat this planet?
Only the sweet parts.
Which parts are the sweet parts?
The white ones.
The white ones? So the white parts you like to eat. There's not a lot of white parts here on Earth.
There are plenty of white parts on Earth. Northern Europe. The suburbs.
So you're talking about white people.
Those little things that run around and make music too. Yes.
For example, Journey.
They are so good tasting.
So you've eaten the entire band Journey. You've eaten Omicron 5. And now you're here on Earth, presumably modeling for another album cover. I'm just going to ask it point blank. Are you here to eat this planet?
Yes.
Lex, come on. I mean, this planet, you might get sick. You don't want to eat this planet.
Look at Hollywood. All those white people. I don't like black people.
Lex, come on. If you're going to eat people, you got to eat all people.
It's just the way I was raised. I'm not a racist giant insect spaceship.
Well, we should talk about your flag. It looks eerily reminiscent.
I don't know what you're talking about. I had nothing to do with the South or that it shall rise again.
That's right, Lex, because I can clearly see, hanging off of your tail, it's about 2 light years across. It's a gigantic Confederate flag.
That's the flag for ships that eat planets, that's all.
No, Lex, no. I've seen that flag many times.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I also notice you've got this orange paint job, and any time you beep your horn... Okay, let's move on. So Lex, do you have any friends, any other spaceships that we might know?
Oh, sure. There are spaceships that I am friends with.
Like who?
Well, they're not around now. I ate them.
You ate all of your friends?
Yes, they were just such yummy little white ships. Not those other ships, those bad ships.
What bad ships would those be?
Have you heard of the ship, the Blackbird?
The Blackbird. Oh, from Battlestar Galactica, yes, of course.
They always want handouts from me.
Lex, just because the Blackbird is a darker tone than some other spaceships does not mean it's looking for a handout.
That's just the way I was raised. They're always eating fried quasars.
Come on now, Lex.
They're not as good as me, except for going really fast. They're faster than me, but that's not fair. It's got an extra booster.
Oh, come on, Lex. That's not true. Everyone knows that's not true.
It is true.
Lex, some of these ideas on this planet are outdated and considered to be racist. Where did you get...
I pick up a lot of radio waves. Like I said, I like Journey in Boston.
So you pick up a lot of radio waves from Earth here, and that's where you're getting these extremist views?
There was a short guy talking in angry language. He made a lot of sense to me, and I started thinking...
Oh, you're talking about Hitler's broadcast into space.
I guess that's his name. Look, all the little symbols that he has, I put them on my ship.
I was going to ask you about those. Now, every single door on the ship here is marked with what appears to be a swastika.
I hired some really cheap, smaller ships to do it for me. It's simple. You just go to the Home Depot Nebula and offer them things.
Oh, come on, Lex. That's not appropriate.
They're very good at cleaning things, like a pool.
Lex, I think we've had just about enough. Our listeners don't want to hear this.
Lex Power.
No, I don't think you're welcome here on our planet.
Do you want me to eat your planet?
Come on, don't eat the planet.
I'm
Lex.
Gonna eat it.
Lex, don't
Hold
eat
on.
It.
On.
Not
it's
the,
so
not the
good.
Table, Lex. Lex, you gotta stop eating the planet,
that's
man.
That's a good planet. So tasty.
We'll be back,
tasty.
Folks. We'll be back
oh,
with more.
Oh, that's a good producer. I haven't Lex had Files, this kind folks. Of white meat in a long time.
Welcome back to episode 2 of the Lex Files, a.k.a. Titties, Tim Curry, and Brains. So Kai comes in and... Because the rest of the crew, well, the boss, Zev, wants to go to Bruna's, he has the coordinates to it. It turns out the scar on his face, which is just a line and an oval at the end of it, is actually coordinates to his homeworld, or to the original world of the Bruna's. And how a two-dimensional line and oval translates into a six-dimensional coordinates for space... Very impressive.
Yeah, the scar is just a line with kind of a circle at the end of it, which I guess is, as a map is just a straight line right. And then the planet at the end. So as long as you're pointing the right direction, anyone can follow that map. They're starting to approach the planet. Stanley doesn't have a clue what he's doing as far as flying the Lex.
No, this is great.
He's telling it to decelerate, and they're coming in real hard, about to just smash right into the surface of the planet.
Yeah, he's giving it all these instructions of, like, cut thrust by 50%, 25%. And finally, Kai saves the day by looking over at Stan and just makes a hand motion of landing. And he just... So finally, Stanley tells the Lex to land. The Lex stops its suicidal run into the planet at full speed and lands normally with its butt first. Like, dick into the planet.
The tail... Yeah. The dick tail going straight down into the planet, basically. It doesn't...
And it falls over to its... On his belly, basically.
I don't know why Stanley didn't realize that the Lex can land itself. He's trying to use really advanced techniques. Maybe he's trying to impress Zev.
Maybe. Or maybe that's just how the Lex is. Maybe most spaceships, you have to tell them exactly what to do. Like, you know, move X number of degrees in this direction, yada yada. But the Lex is smart enough to land itself because it's a living creature.
So the Lex has a much... better navigation system right. than any other ship that
it's
Stanley like, might have any experience
It's kind of like a horse. If you're riding a horse and you tell it to go, it'll go. You have to tell it where to put its foot. It'll just move on its own.
Right. You're not up there saying, you know, horse left front foot,
one foot forward.
Yeah,
1 foot forward, you know, right back foot, half a foot forward. Like, no, it just knows what to do.
That's a good point.
Thank you. So let's talk about the CGI.
A lot of CGI, really well done, as always, on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Jigarada has this kind of worm tongue that can extend out of her mouth, and it also has a mouth at the end
it's
of the tongue.
Very aliens.
Very much like Alien, but it can whip around the whole right. room real fast. It's a pretty powerful attack.
The planet itself is dead, which is why his ancestors left the planet. It is circled by spherical satellites that are shooting a blue orb into the sun to stop something like supernova. So that's cool looking.
Well, they're not satellites, really. It's coming from the buildings themselves.
But it shoots it towards the satellites, and the satellites...
And they relay it.
They relay it, right.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So when they land, the planet itself is pretty advanced looking. It's what you expect from an advanced alien society. It's got all these antennas, as John said, that are shooting blue power up to the satellites.
It's just energy.
And luckily, Kai remembers or knows from, I guess, Brunji Elementary School, all of this stuff. He understands this planet, knows the map of it perfectly, knows where to go. And they go to this giant head-shaped building that I suppose is the library or the repository of all knowledge for their people. And that's where we are finally introduced to my favorite character of the show, Tim Curry, a.k.a. Poet Man.
So is that the actual character name, is Poet Man?
Yes.
I was wondering, yeah, because I was just considering him Tim Curry the whole episode.
He is Tim Curry, and his poems are not very good.
And so he's a hologram. He's not a person, because all the Burnji are dead.
Right, except for Kai. And he explains why he's on the planet. It turns out he had a wicked bender, got wasted, woke up 4 days later, and everyone had already left the planet without him. So that's why he was stuck there. And I presume record all of these
holograms and all these. There's kind of weird traps in this building. They're right. not well. They're not really it's, traps so much as just pressure plates and complicated tomb-like things.
It's almost like a pyramid or Indiana Jones with pressure plates that you activate different things.
Yeah. So Tim Curry shows up. He welcomes them to the planet as if it's like the entrance to a theme park.
He overrides the default hologram, which is your standard greeting. Hello, welcome to Brunus. Welcome to the Hall of Knowledge, whatever it's called. And they go into it looking for some kind of secret of how to make Kai alive again. At this point, Jigarada is back on the Lex and frees herself with her worm tongue by cutting the restraints that are keeping her restrained. Now, I think this is a big fault. Like, Stan, later in the show, mentions how he wanted to have her shot into space. That makes sense. If there's a cannibal on your ship, just eject him into space.
Just tying him up the way they did was they basically blocked off a doorway by putting her in a big X of ropes, limiting their movement on the ship so they could keep this prisoner, when the Lex, most certainly being created for the Divine Shadow, has prisoner-keeping cells somewhere
on
it.
Oh, you'd imagine he'd have to, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he's all prisoners or torture.
Or chuck her back in the sewage. It took weeks for her to get out of that.
Yeah, or just shoot her into space.
Like Stanley said.
Right, or feed her to the Lex. Oh, that better come up. I want the Lex to eat people.
So they're going through this building. Jigarada is up on the Lex trying to find food. They're wandering around with hologram Tim Curry. There's other holograms that are still trying to give like the original instructions, and then Tim Curry just shows up and contradicts them every time.
Right, and he's trying to be folksy friendly to them. He's not very funny though, and his poems suck. Maybe that is why he got left behind. He's a bad poet.
And the duality there with 790's poems and his poems.
Okay,
790's poems about sex and life, his poems about death.
That's deep. So, a lot of deep themes in this show, guys.
On the Lex, the brains realize Jigarada is there, and they start calling out, "Jigarada, we want you."
So Jigarada goes down, talks to them, and she is just hungry.
She eats a brain.
Right.
Just rips it out of its little pod there. The other brains are all freaking out.
No!
Don't eat us!
Don't eat us! So the brains hatch Oh, this is fantastic. The brains know that she wants food. And she even says the brains taste bad. And she'll keep trying more brains until she finds a tasty brain. So the brains, using their brain power, I guess, project an image of what is softcore gay porn.
It's basically milk-fed gay porn guys.
With milk flowing over their shaved chests. And, okay, I'm gonna go for it. The best part is, this is not just a simulation. This is a planet of milk-fed boys. I mean, somewhere in the universe is a planet full of just men who are waiting to be fucked, to be ate.
Eaten, yeah. She wants to eat them.
What the hell sense of a planet full of men to be ate?
Well, that's what they promised her. It's not necessarily a real planet. I think they could be tricking Jigarada.
They could be. A few questions then. Is this one like the brain sexual fantasies? Like, hey guys, I've been working on this for a while. I'm gonna put it in her head. Or did one of the brains set up the planet when they were the Divine Shadow? Divine Shadow, what should we do this week? Well, what I really want to do is have a planet full of naked men that are fed by milk. Okay, Divine Shadow, we'll do it for you.
I just need about 45 seconds of footage from this planet in case I ever need to blackmail a space cannibal.
Do you want women? No.
All men.
All men. Shaved chest. Milk. Got it? Yes, sir, Divine Shadow. And then they just go build it. So back on the planet, the three of them are looking for the secret for life for Kai, and they find symbols above doors, and they're trying to figure out which door to go into. As they hit different pressure pads, it states what it is, pretty much. Kai mentions that the bird symbol is the symbol for life, and so Zev's automatically wants to go in there so she can save Kai and then get some Kai dick.
Right, that's her whole endgame here.
Yeah, that's her endgame, is Kai dick.
So she finds the right pressure plate, steps on it, and she kind of turns into some floating gold dust and flies through a gateway.
Into that door.
Kai immediately jumps in after her in case she's going to be in danger there. Stanley decides that he's not going to play the hero at this point and just stands around there in the lobby with Tim Curry kind of shooting the shit.
But he wants to go in. He's talking to himself, why am I such a coward? Why am I going after them? But it's dangerous. So still, he's conflicted.
And he explains what he really wants, which is love.
He's a lonely guy. And it makes sense if everyone thinks you're a traitor.
Right, no one's on his side in this universe, really, even the people who are on his side. Like, they would save his butt, but they're not really his friends.
Do you think that if he was not the captain on the Lex, like he didn't have the key, that he would have been kicked off the ship? Or what would his role be if he was just a passenger? Let's say Zev had the key.
They probably would have left without him, I think.
He serves no purpose otherwise.
So this point, I think, is a good place to take a break, because once we get into what's going on in that room, it gets weird.
Yeah, the BRNG, for being a incredibly advanced human society with space travel and the ability to stop a supernova from happening, have some really fucked up views of life and saving people's lives, it's weird. This is where this episode really starts showing that, once again, this is Lex weirdness. And now, a word from our sponsors. As entertainers, it's our responsibility to educate our listeners.
That's right, Kevin.
Today, I want to talk about Dare.
You mean that Nickelodeon show with the slime?
No. I'm talking about Dare. Drug Abuse Resistance Education.
I hear that's making quite an impact in our schools.
Let's say you want to smoke some weed. What do you do, John?
I guess I would just smoke some weed.
How would you do that? Would you roll the joint? I dare you to keep off drugs. You don't want to go down to 8th Street, find a guy named Jimmy, say, hey now, Jimmy. Jimmy gives you the nod. He takes you into his house. You gotta suck his dick for some cocaine. You don't want to do that, kids.
Dare is against all of this.
Dare is against drugs. Dare doesn't want you to go see your friends in high school, get them to smoke weed, have a great time, and have sex with lots of girls, and listen to cool music. Dare does not want you to do that.
Not that kind of a dare. You're not daring your friends to do drugs and alcohol. You're daring them not to do drugs and alcohol. A lot of people miss that distinction.
I'm not daring you to do a shit ton of coke and see how long you can say hard for and fuck girls. I am not daring you to do that. Dare. Just don't do it. Part 2. Welcome back to the show. Thank you for continuing to listen. When we last left you, Kai and Zev were sucked into a weird room on Brunus, the ancestral homeworld of Kai. Stanley, being a coward, has been left outside with creepy Tim Curry talking to him about love.
Zev and Kai are now inside of this room, and they're getting basically visions of their individual fantasies. Everything that they want to happen, everything they want to come true is all kind of running through their heads. They're not sure if it's real, and Zev is thinking that Kai is alive now.
He's and they're dancing back to life. And singing together.
Yes, they are. There is a definite musical sequence here when Kai and Zev are singing and dancing.
You also get some backstory for Zev.
Right,
Zev,
we find that her parents had, in fact, sent her to a holocare home.
Right, an orphanage in the future, I guess, where she was so ugly or unwanted, they sent her to a holocare home, was preparing her to be married off to somebody, which is how she got stuck marrying that kid from the first episode and then getting transformed to a love slave.
And I assume that a holocare home is basically a foster home run by holograms, probably with about the same efficiency as the court system we saw in the cluster.
Yeah, you would agree with that? It's as efficient. It's as sterile.
It's as bad. So it doesn't sound like a nice place, a holocare home.
At the same time, Stanley is talking to Tim Curry about love. Tim Curry understands exactly what Stan wants, which is to be loved and accepted. So he takes him into the love room of the same complex.
One slight problem, though.
The love machine is trying to determine his gender by flashing lights on his genitals and eyes. Of course, since it's Lex, it breaks and decides that Stan is a woman.
Exactly. So this fuck machine, basically, thinks that Stanley is a woman. Tim Curry is kind of talking dirty to him in hologram form. It's kind of disgusting. There's a hypodermic needle filled with Tim Curry's jizz that is slowly being moved towards Stanley's crotch.
Right. Basically, Tim Curry wants to be immortal by impregnating Stan with his jizz needle, which is dripping jizz from the tip of it. Poor Stan is trapped in this chair with his legs spread, waiting to be pierced in the dick with the needle.
And it's at the same time we find that Kai and Zev are also just in chairs being held down by hands, basically, like robot hands. And they have saw blades coming at them from the various machinery. So they're not necessarily in the love room, they're in the eternal life room. And it turns out that crazy hologram Tim Curry's idea of eternal life, or maybe all of the Burn G, their crazy idea of eternal life is to kill you, cut out a thin cross section of your body, like a thin slice from the middle of you, and press it between two pieces of glass forever.
And don't forget the CD. It then stores your brain as a CD. This is weird. Why do they have to hit a cross section of your body? It's like they are a planet based on butchers, and all the technology is butcher based. They're going to cut a nice slim section off you and use that as your immortal soul or immortal information.
Right, because it's carrying your DNA in the sliver of you and then your brain on the CD.
So this happens to poor Kai, but he is, of course, you know, dead Kai. Gets sliced in half. They take his brain CD and take it away. Zev, understandably so, is freaking the fuck out right now.
Right, she's not dead like Kai, so if those saw blades get to her, it's going to just be a nasty mess of screams and blood everywhere. It's not going
to
go well.
And we don't want to lose Zev. She's the best part of the show.
These saw blades are actually run by like a system of bicycle chains and gears, which I thought was pretty interesting.
So back to Stan, as the cum syringe is inching towards him, at the last moment it is destroyed by...
Jigarada.
Jigarada, savior. Jigarada has spoken with the brains and has agreed to help them in exchange again to find the boy sex planet.
Right, she wants the milk-fed boy cannibal sex planet.
Right, which, why not if you're a cannibal?
Yeah, for her, that was the perfect fantasy for the brains to promise her.
Not just for her,
so she wants to save Stanley so she can steal the Lex. She tells Stanley that Kai and Zev are already on the Lex.
Right.
They head over to the ship, at which point Jigarada hits a button kind of on the side of the landing pad, which turns off the relays that are keeping the sun stable.
Right. She finds, or she was told by the brains, how to find a room that's a control system for all the relays. She also dupes poor Stan to helping her by saying she has an amazing hunger for flesh, but also for dick. And poor Stan is so lonely that banging a cannibal woman...
In a skin suit.
In a skin suit, who also wears a cape or a hood made of a human face, that's okay by him.
You know, I do not want to see the sex scene between Stanley and Jigarada.
Oh, I want to see a sex scene. Jesus. I mean, there's a few things here. One, it's going to be rough sex, right?
Because she's just... brutal. Stanley is kind of a coward. He's probably a gentle lover.
Oh, he'd be a gentle lover, but also selfish, given his personality. He one, two, chump, pom, done. And then Jigarada's unhappy. Here's the question, though. Do you get a blowjob from Jigarada? Because she might eat your dick. Literally eat your dick.
She might do that. She is a cannibal.
These are things that I think about, John. A lot.
So she turns off the relays that are, and these relays, again, they're bouncing energy up through the satellite system to keep the star from going supernova.
Because why not?
Because that works somehow. It somehow has destabilized. Berenji know that the planet is doomed. They're just trying to keep it as long as possible so they can have a big party at the end of the universe or at the end of the world.
So she turns off the power, which also turns off the power to Zeb's chainsaw that's going to split her in half and then save her brain because that makes sense.
So there's kind of a back and forth between Stanley and Jigarada when he realizes that Zev and Kai are not on the Lex. He keeps turning the power back on, which moves the saw blades inches closer to Zev, but also turns off the destabilizing supernova, which would happen in about 15 minutes if they leave it turned off. Jigarada keeps turning the power back off, stopping Zev's saw blades, but also inching towards the supernova.
So Jigarada has enough of this shit and uses her mouth tongue, to take off Stanley's hand, because all she needs is the hand to fly the Lex.
Yeah, her tongue coils and just flies out of her mouth across the room and eats Stanley's hand pretty painlessly, it seemed like, actually.
Is it painless?
I would expect it would be painful, but Stanley didn't seem too shaken by it.
Maybe he's just too dead inside.
Could be. The security guards.
It's a deep life, man. It's hard. Poor Stan. So yeah, so she runs back to the Lex, puts Stan's hand on a pole, and puts it by the... bridge or in the bridge of the Lex to control it. And she's trying to get the Lex to do things, but she's going, "Raw, Jigarada, want Lex to move, Jigarada." Oh god, a debate between the Lex and Jigarada would be fantastic.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah. It's just all third person.
And so Jigarada is, she's trying, but it's not working because the Lex also needs to recognize Stanley's voice in addition to his hand.
Jigarada is pissed.
She is pissed. She goes back into the brains. She starts just freaking out, smashing brains. She eats a couple more brains. She's furious that the brains have lied to her.
She needs Stanley. And we're on a timer here because the planet's about to get blown up by the supernova. So they convince her to go back to the planet to get Stan.
And as soon as she leaves, the brains start with kind of a group chuckle. And the brains are able to, by speaking in unison, create a waveform that matches Stanley's voice and steal the Lex.
Right. So, or to lift off. So Lex starts lifting off, leaving. Jigarada is beyond pissed at this point and turns around to fly back.
On her, she's on one of the little moth delivery escape pod kind of things. Yeah. She flies off the Lex. The ship's taking off. She lands on top of one of the relays.
Can we talk about the relays for a second?
Absolutely.
They're dicks.
They are dicks, erecting and de-erecting over and over through that whole sequence of them turning the power on and off.
How many dicks we have in this episode so far?
Are we counting each individual relay? Because there was about thousands of those.
There are thousands of dicks, yeah. No, we're counting each object as a dick, regardless of how many of them there are.
Okay.
So we have Lex's tail.
Right, the Lex's tail and the control sticks for the moth.
We've got shower dick.
The shower head was definitely an uncircumcised dick.
Obviously, yeah. The control towers are dicks.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any dicks in the actual building itself? I don't think so.
No, I think that's about it.
A real lack of dicks in this part.
So the brains are taking off the Lex. Jigarada's on top of a relay.
Yeah.
Jigarada also.
So Jigarada is then on top of the relay, flipping out. And as she's flipping out and doing her guttural Jigarada scream, the moth says basically fuck off and just flies off on its own back to the Lex without her. Because she decided it'd be wise to get out of the moth and then yell at the Lex.
Yeah, not very smart.
She's not a smart character. Meanwhile,
the power is now turned back on. The saw is coming for Zev.
It's off.
I think it's on at this point. Because then Kai reforms.
No, it's off. Because remember, he goes around stumbling with the dog hand. He has the... So Stan is without a hand.
Right.
And he's going through the vault of all these cross-sections of people and the CDs. There's also a magical blue star in the sky as well.
I don't think we saw that yet, did we?
He was talking when he first gets to the planet. He says, I know all of these stars, but not that one. Mm-hmm. I know the sky. So yeah, so Stan is looking around, stumbling, trying to find Zev and Kai. He touches one of the CDs and transfers the knowledge of that person to him. This is one of the weirdest parts of the show. It's the Time Oracle. This is the same oracle that foretold the last of the Brun G would kill the Shadow. With that said, the Time Oracle is talking to this guy who came to see her like you do with an oracle.
So he was getting a commendation or he was getting something.
He was trying to get advice. He's like, about the harvest next year. But she doesn't care what he wants. She's like, no, this is important. Stanley Tweedle, you need to go to this part of the compound and find Zev. So he does.
Yeah, so that's a pretty interesting part. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around there. So he's watching like the archive of someone's brain.
Memory.
Brain, yeah, their memory, and her being so powerful, she can see into the future and realizes that Stanley is watching that she can then tell him, look, you need to go save Kai and Zev right now.
So he gets to a manhole cover, basically, opens it up, and there is Zev.
She's on the table. The saw is not too close to her yet, but getting
it's
close.
Getting there. It moves at the speed of plot.
Very slowly, yes.
Right. He's trying to figure out a way down there with the rope.
With one hand.
With one hand. So at this point, I don't fault Stanley because
he couldn't just drop there. It would have just not been able to help her if he dropped.
He would have fallen like 20 feet and gotten to her or died. Also, Stanley's acting pretty heroic in this last half. He doesn't want the plant to be blown up. So he stood the Jigarada, lost his hand, and is now trying to find Kai and Zev. I'm sure part of this is also self-preservation.
Thinks they're his best chance.
Sure, they're the people he's with, unless he wants to be on the Lex by himself.
Or with Jigarada, right?
Right. Luckily, the blue star light hits. It had to happen this way, or else this wouldn't make sense or wouldn't work. The blue star light is magic. It hits the scan of Kai's brain, which then goes through or shines through the opening that Stan made, hits Kai, and then Kai, half his body, fires their little caw machine, takes out the cutter, and then Kai reforms himself.
Yeah, so his whole body basically just gets reformed crotch to head right up the middle, including his hair.
Yeah, his hair forms back up just like his body did, which means it's like some kind of magical proto-blood mousse or hair gel.
Definitely some proto-blood mousse.
Oh, that'd be a great product to have in this galaxy. They're trying to figure out how to turn back on the
relays.
The relays, because we're down to like 11 minutes before it blows up.
So they get to the panel of controls they were at before. Stanley tries one that he thinks was it. He's wrong. And now there's guns pointed at them saying, if you choose wrong again, blast you to shit.
And you have 10 heartbeats, not seconds. Heartbeats.
Which he took 10 seconds, though.
That's more than 10 heartbeats.
Oh, yeah.
If it's about to blow up, I am freaking out.
Maybe he's a calm dude, or maybe it's one of Kai's heartbeats that they actually had forever.
That would be a great workaround. So finally, he finds the right button. The Dick Towers elevate back up.
It looks like the day is saved. Stanley thinks he's a hero. He's like, oh, Stan the man, saving the day. Then they hear the countdowns. 10 minutes until the supernova, 13 minutes until power is fully restored. Not enough time, planet's still going to blow up. Kai says, sorry guys, there's nothing more we can do. Let's go watch the eclipse.
You know, because Kai has a lot of great one-liners. He says, let's go watch the supernova. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event.
That's a good one, yes.
And he has a lot of these corny phrases that he says when he kills somebody. So they're back at the front of the facility, watching the sun expand.
Holding hands, it's actually a really nice moment. Our three main characters are all kind of standing there, holding hands, watching the supernova start. The star is bulging up, it's about to explode, and then suddenly the blue energy star that we saw earlier just suddenly kind of whips around, and the two stars sort of start intermingling.
And it's shooting a blue wave or blue stream at that star to control it, kind of. But also, it shoots the Lex. And the Lex starts turning around and going back to the planet.
To the great chagrin of the brains.
Oh, and the brains are yelling at it in Stanley's voice, which is great. And it states, I'm being controlled by a more powerful being than you. So the Lex flies back, puts its thing in the ground, falls over, lands. It's the best landing procedure ever. And then the star talks to Stan. And it talks to...
To everyone.
To everyone. And explains, you know, we are the blue star and the Brunan sun. We will see you in the next time loop. Now is not your time to die. And they get off the planet.
Yeah, and they basically hint that you will fulfill the prophecy,
right.
Which is good. So then our heroes all load up on the Lex. They're getting out of there. Jigarada still standing on top of one of the relays, and the supernova basically continues where it left off, after the Lex is out of range. So Jigarada, done for.
Exploded in the supernova. Away. She's dead.
790 begrudgingly fixes Stan's hand for him.
Puts it on backwards, though, first.
Yeah, gives him an extra left hand.
And the show ends with Stan and Zeb and 790 on the bridge saying, let's find a new home.
And yeah, and we're back to the search for a new home.
Right. So let's talk about some of the themes of this show. So, a few of the themes. Zeb's in charge, right? We already went over that. Also, we are going to explore Stanley's character more. He is a coward. He isn't meant to be liked. But at the same point, he's going to have some self-preservation heroics or those kinds of moments.
You know, and Kai, I find, is a pretty difficult character because he's dead. You know, he doesn't care about being dead. He's not really that necessarily sold on finding a new home then, since he's basically has less than 10 days left to live now.
And he lets people know he's dead all the time. The dead do not have once.
It's practically all he talks about.
Right. Very singular in the show. Some other things that I noticed on the show, the interaction between 790 and Stan is fantastic, because they don't like each other at all. They're only unifying feature is they both want Zeb. So there's a weird competition, but not really competition, because neither one has a chance with Zeb, but they're both just so desperate to get her affection that they work together when she tells them to.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree with that. And that's going to do it for episode 2 of The Lex Files, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Join us again next week. And don't forget to go to our website, thelexfiles.angelfire.com. You can email us, thelexfiles@hotmail.com. And of course, if you're listening to this podcast in the future, follow us on Twitter @thelexfiles.
Thank you, and good night.